Hello and welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for BP Southside, Baseball Prospectus local site covering the Chicago White Sox. You can find us at bpsouthside.com. And as I suspect, since you're already listening to this podcast, you know you can find it by searching for the Catbird Speaks on your various favorite podcast apps. My name is Nick Schaefer, co-editor-in-chief at BP Southside. And I'm joined here for a very handsome podcast with Dr. 100 himself, Mark Permiano, out in Las Vegas, Nevada. How are you, Mark?
Pretty good. And not only is it a very handsome podcast, it's a very handsome duly married podcast.
That's right.
We're both now husbands.
I know. We're such conventionally, we're just doing things by the book. I mean, a doctor and a lawyer getting married.
Stay to each other. It's good stuff.
You just got back from your honeymoon, right?
Yeah, just got back Saturday. Yeah, Saturday.
Thoughts?
Days are really kind of weird. I haven't worked since like the 9th, so days of the week really haven't meant much to me for a little while. Tomorrow's my first day back at work in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. Well, that's, I appreciate you giving us your last night of freedom here to talk a little bit of baseball. My honeymoon doesn't start for a month, it's surreal that it's creeping up so fast because it's just been this like extremely distant thing for so long. But the impetus for this podcast. Oh, you know, I forgot the most handsome person on the podcast of all. I believe Dante is joining us.
Currently, he has relocated to the kitchen, but since it's after 3 o'clock, I fully expect to creep back up and yell at me because he wants dinner.
That beautiful marmalade boy that he is. Yeah. So the Hall of Fame ballot for the class of 2018 was announced, even though, you know, the the requirements to get in are known beforehand, so anybody could have figured it out ahead of time, years in advance. But regardless, it's now, seeing as the winter meetings haven't started yet, and the only trades are Jerry DePoto making trades off the back of his roster, much like the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. This is a big thing to talk about. And Mark, you wrote an article about it today.
Yeah, well, I think it's really fun because you always know, like, which big name people, even if they're not going to get in or not. So, like, you're just like, oh, well, yeah, this is the year, like, Johan Santana hits and, like, stuff like that. But then you also get to remember people that you'd completely ever forgotten existed but used to mean something, like Kevin Millwood and Jason Isringhausen. Like, these were people that was like, yeah, they were really good. And then once they retired, it's like, I have not thought about either of them in 5 years. Like, the day they retired, they just kind of stopped existing to me.
Yeah.
And that's why I always really like this day where it's just like, oh, it's finally out. And you're just like, oh, yeah, you're going to be off the ballot in a year, but, like, you exist.
Yeah, and some of these guys, like you said, were, like, really good players for a long time. I mean, sure, like, Levon Hernandez hung around as sort of an anomaly pseudo punchline for a while at the end there, but, like, you know, dude had a good career. He won a World Series. He was really good early on, and then he hung around as an innings eater for forever. He could hit pretty well for a pitcher, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Better than I remembered here. He had a 526 career OPS.
Well, it's even, you look at, like, last year, there were 32 guys on the ballot, and most, only 19 of them made it to this year. Only 19 got held over, or not so much held over, but either were held over or actually made it. You had 11, 12 guys just fall off, and these were guys that in their peak were Jim Edmonds, Nomar Garciaparra, like really, really good players. Not just the Mark Grunzelonics and Randy Wins that were on there, but like Mike Hampton. And yeah, it's all just crazy to look at all this.
We've had some weird players fall off like real quick. I mean, I think Kevin Brown fell off after one ballot. I think.
Yeah, Edmonds falling off after one was very like, huh. Like, I didn't, obviously no one ever thought he's going to make it. It's Jim Edmonds. But yeah, like to be gone that quick.
Yeah, it's weird that it's like, oh yeah, more than 95% of the electorate thought he wasn't a top 10 guy. And you know, some of this is the timing. Like, you know, Kenny Lofton's another guy that fell off way too quick. He was one and done, which, you know, and we're gonna get to this in depth, I'm sure. He has teammates who are on this ballot who are gonna last longer than that.
Oh, yeah.
Who shouldn't. or at least shouldn't relative to Mr. Lofton. Like, I don't know how much we really need to discuss the dudes who really, like, Vlad and Trevor Hoffman are coming in over 70% from last year. I assume they're both going in.
They'll be in. Chipper Jones is going to be in. Jim Tomey is going to be in. So it's going to be at least four guys in this year. Like, yeah, there's no chance Jim and Chipper aren't making it.
If they aren't, it's like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, we shouldn't have to talk about it. But, I mean, yeah, like, Tomey's a career 276, 402, 554 with over 600 home runs and no steroid cloud. Other than that, he was big and strong, which, you know, yeah, like, who cares?
And is just one of the most likable baseball players ever. Just phenomenal player who's also just an A-plus human being.
Yeah.
He's the most, like, slam dunks. It's like Chipper Jones is great. He's a Hall of Fame talent, but he's an asshole. And just an all-around just bad person.
Yeah.
But not like Curt Schilling level bad, just like, yep, you're exactly how I expected you to be bad.
Oh, well, now that you get into some interesting questions about the relative badness of dudes, where it's like, okay, so Schilling can't stop himself from saying really stupid and offensive, horrible things. But in terms of, like, actions that harm people, I guess you're weighing Schilling tanking a business with heavy investment from Rhode Island, which, you know, like, hurts a lot of people. But I think you can also just chalk that up to, like, an honest mistake. Whereas, didn't Chipper Jones, like, is his family life, like, really rough? Anyway, this is...
Yeah. There's definite marital issues with Chipper.
I mean, this may be going beyond the scope. Beyond the brief, as they might say on Great British Bake Off. But, so, like, those guys are obvious. I mean, Clemens and Bonds are interesting because they started picking up some steam. And Joe Morgan...
After Joe Morgan's thing, I think they're actually going to get a good head of steam. Like, I would not be shocked if either of them make the jump this year. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if they don't. But with Joe Morgan and it being sent by the Baseball Hall of Fame, their tacit agreement to it, trying to tell writers, like, no, you can't put these guys in there. Writers really don't respond positively to being like, no, this is what you're going to write. Like, this is how you're going to vote. It's like, so I could actually see a lot of the ones who are kind of like, obviously you're going to have your steadfast people that are just like, no, never Bonds, never Clemens. But as we've seen over the past couple votes, like, enough have started to be like, all right, like, they've received their punishment from us and crap like that, that now it's going to be like, oh, well, you're making me pick between making my own choice or telling me what to do. I'm voting for them now.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of petulance, and I'm going to laugh really hard if little, like, teenage stomp bullcrap tantrums are what ultimately push Clemens and Bonds over and get them in.
Yeah, I mean, they were already at, so they were at 50, basically 54%, both of them last year. And I think, I don't know that they get in this year, but now you're right. Like, I think next year's probably what I would guess. I could see them jumping up to the high 60s and then getting over the line next year. Especially, it's one of those things, too, where, like, especially with their candidacies where there's just no question about their on-the-field merit and it's all about off-the-field stuff, that I could see enough writers sort of, like, looking around at each other, like, are you going to do it? Are you? And even already having gone to 50%, being like, okay, like, more than half of us are willing to make the jump, like, you know, let's just stop talking about this and put them in because that's where they should be. But yeah, the Joe Morgan letter, for those of you who didn't see it, I mean, I'm sure you did.
If you're the type that's listening to this, yeah.
But he sent an email to the voters, I guess, on, like, the Hall of Fame email chain or something like that, or, like, on their letterhead or something. Like, it was, like you said, it was tacitly endorsed by the Hall of Fame. And it was like, oh, the Hall of Fame is this sacred, special place, and cheaters shouldn't be in. And it's like, he even tries to address the obvious flaw in his argument, which is just there's already a bunch of cheaters in there, with, like, oh, well, times change, and, like, it was cool then, but now it's not. And it's like, you know.
Yeah, Greeny's steroids bad.
Yeah, and you name it, like, anything else, like, any number of different ways. Like, Gaylord Perry's in there, and, All kinds of horrible people who did things that I say are worse than cheating are in there. You know, racists and wife beaters and, you know, all kinds of that colorful stuff is already in there. So, yeah, Jo Morgan, again, not the best opinion haver. He may, like, I like that angle of him maybe spurring people into the opposite effect that he's hoping to achieve. So those two, we've got, just going down the list here from last year, Mucina's at 51-52% from last year. I think it's silly that he's not in yet.
It's very silly. I don't know that he's ever going to make it, though, just because you think of, unless we start getting the glut cleared out, I think he might just kind of get stuck in, like, the 50s, 60s range, and then, like, his last year be like, oh, 73, sorry, buddy.
Well, we finally did get that. Could, you know, I wouldn't rule that out. We did get Reigns, but we've also finally, after a year where I think the nadir was where nobody got in. I think that was like three years ago.
Sounds right.
You know, you had three get in on the first ballot, so that kind of helps alleviate things. You know, because Thomas, Glavine, and Maddox were all first ballot, right?
Yeah.
And then Bagwell and Piazza finally got in, and Biggio last year. I think. No, was that 2 years ago? I'm even confused on what year it is. I was just at the Hall of Fame like 2 weeks ago.
I was going to say census pictures from there.
Yeah, and Randy Johnson got in, all that stuff. So a lot of those were like the input on the logjam has not been as bad because those guys are just flying in. So hopefully that'll give us some time to address some of these other guys who've been hanging around. I think it used to be that if you got past 50%, with a few years to go, you almost certainly got in. And that, granted, that was with 15 years on the belt instead of 10. But, you know, Messina's got 5-6 years left. He's already halfway there. So I'm optimistic for him, especially as a lot of these guys come clear off.
Yeah.
So then you Edgar. Get... Yeah, Edgar. Edgar's more one of the more divisive guys. He's on his 9th out of 10 years of candidacy. He had 50... just shy of 57% last year. What do you think, Edgar?
He had 58.6 last year. Not that that really makes any difference.
Oh, sorry, I misspoke. Just shy of 50.
But I like Edgar. I think he's a very good candidate. I think he's not ultimately going to get there because if he doesn't make it this year, he needs to make it next year. And I've looked up already who some of the first ballot guys are going to be next year. You've got Mariano Rivera, and he's in. Roy Halladay, who was going to be a maybe in or out, but after his untimely death, I think that's going to make a giant push that he'll get in. Andy Pettit's going to soak up a lot of votes, even though I don't think he deserves to be in. Todd Helton will be there soaking up a ton of votes. Yeah, it's one of those where he kind of needs to make it a very big push this year, but he's one that's so easy to argue against if you're just looking at counting stats.
Yeah, the counting stats are a problem for him. The DH thing doesn't help either, although, you know, Frank Thomas, I think, got most of his at-bats as a DH, and so that kind of...
He did, but also he had those big, beautiful round numbers where once you cross 500 home runs and don't have a hint of steroid allegations...
Oh, I know. Also, Frank Thomas is perfect, but, like, my thing is that... is more that it helps.
It helps open the door.
Yeah, that just along like those lines.
Ostage and Sutter got in. It was like, okay, now we're actually going to start adding relief pitchers, which it's silly that it takes so long because it's been a position forever.
Yeah, and like we didn't talk about Hoffman because I didn't, you know, like you said, he's going in regardless of what I think.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's like, you know, our relievers, the value of relievers and how we think of that has shifted a lot in recent years. But like, as far as closers go, as the role has developed, like, yeah, he was one of the best of all time. So, I don't feel very conflicted about it. I mean, Edgar, I think Edgar's actually more of a borderline guy than there are people who it seemed to be split between, like, oh, he's a slam dunk. If you don't think he's in, you're an idiot. People, and then people who are like, no way, he doesn't have the counting stats, and he is a DH. And I'm kind of in between, where I don't think he's like a no doubter by any means. I think he's it, you know, the counting stats are one thing, but you know, it's a shorter career. You know, he came up late. He was 27 before he got a full-time opportunity to play, which is not normal for a Hall of Famer, and so he doesn't have as many plate appearances. And, you know, to me, I make this comparison on Twitter all the time, and I wanted to talk to you about it and see if you think I'm being silly. I say that he's basically identical to Larry Walker on offense, and Larry Walker was an excellent defensive outfielder who was a really good base runner. And Edgar Martinez.
I don't think that's ridiculous at all. I think that's a very fair comparison. I actually thought of that today when I was looking up their numbers while I was writing the article. And even in the article, you can see when I list them back to back, where it's just like it's the same argument. But then also with Walker, people do the knock on him because so much of his career came at Coors.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's a very legitimate argument. It's one of those where with both of them, I think Walker is more deserving. And I think Edgar's deserving as well, but it's one of those where, like, if they miss out, to me it's not as egregious as if Tim Raines hadn't made it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. What's annoying to me is I think Edgar is going to get in, and I think Walker isn't. And I think that's entirely because of the same thing that – it's the same thing that happened with Jim Rice where, you know, Martinez is more deserving than Jim Rice, but you have
everyone pretty much is more deserving than Jim Rice.
Right. You have this really loud – very heavily, well, you know, represented in the blogosphere and in national media, fan base in the Mariners. Martinez played for them his whole career. He was beloved, and you know, rightfully so. Like, you know, if I were a Mariners fan, I'd be like, you know, a huge Edgar stan as well. But it annoys me that such a guy who I think is such a clearly superior candidate is going to get dusted by this guy just because he has like people screaming louder about him on Twitter or whatever.
Yeah, and Walker has the misfortune of he never really played anywhere that people cared about until the very end of his career.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, he was on the last great Expos teams, but outside of Canada, no one really cared. And really, that was outside of Montreal. And then he went to Colorado, and yeah, he was great in Colorado, but the team did nothing. And that was 10 years of just playing for a team that no one cared about, and realistically, no one still does.
And it was at a time where he wasn't the only dude putting up crazy batting average triple crown numbers.
No,
on that team, like you had Ellis Burks and Vinny Castilla and Dante Bichette, who were all putting up cartoon numbers. But like, if you actually look at it now, like, you know, I understand Coors in the 90s was like ludicrous, but you know,
his 1997 season is just comical. 366, 452, 720.
Yeah.
49 home runs, 33 steals.
Yeah.
This is as a 30-year-old, and it's just like, what?
Yeah, and he I think that year his OPS on the road was higher than it was at home. Like, for all the people who talk about Coors. And
yeah,
it's like...
Like, Coors definitely enhances, but like, it's not like we're talking about Preston Wilson.
No.
Where it was like, oh, okay, yeah, this could have been what made the big difference. This was someone who was already phenomenally talented getting that extra boost.
Yeah, this is what a Hall of Fame hitter would do in that environment. Like, he wasn't – it's not like, oh, this is good for Coors. Like, yeah, he hit his triple slash from 97 to 2001 was 357, 445, 658. I mean, yeah, like, that's what – you know, park adjustments aren't perfect, but like, they do exist, and we're able to do it. And you know, his even with Coors, like, OPS plus is park adjusted, and for his for his career, just looking at OPS plus isn't perfect. You could do it for weighted runs created. Edgar Martinez is at 147, and Larry Walker is at 141, and I think WRC comes out kind of plus comes out similarly.
Like, yeah, within and a point or two. That difference of what was it, six?
Yeah.
Because you said 147 for Gar. Yeah, that's a difference of six with one of them playing corner outfield and playing it phenomenally.
Yeah. And the other.
It's not like we're talking about Carlos Lee in left field, which we can get to later. But yeah, we're talking about someone who was like cream of the crop, even when he was hurt, was still making these great plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very weird. It sucks that Walker's not gonna, he's not gonna make it. There's just not enough time left to save his candidacy.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he'll get veterans committed in, you know, 10 maybe, 20 yeah. years from now. You know, it's fine. If Edgar gets in, great. It's just, it bums me out in the context of this. Schilling, I mean, do you, he should be, you know, purely on the field. He
yeah,
should
if
be
you're looking the... at it, if you can ignore the fact that he's repugnant and just awful, yeah, numbers-wise, he does deserve it. And really, it's the only positive of, yep, you can only pick 10 guys, is that he has to keep sitting.
Yep.
Because it's like, yeah, if I can only pick 10 guys, and then my bias of do I like them as a person is the decider between him getting my 10th vote or someone else getting it, it's like, yeah, I don't feel bad about that. If the tiebreaker has to be like, well, character, which is supposed to count, like, okay, one of you thinks a journalist should be hung, and the other just smiles a lot, I'm going with the guy that smiles a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Gosh, yeah, Fred McGriff is got 2 more years left on the ballot. I'm surprised it's not.
Surprised. Yeah, that doesn't seem
feels like he's
like
how's
he's
he
always been like Fred McGriff's been on the ballot since I was like 4.
Yeah, how is he not? How's he only been on there 1 more year than Walker? That makes no sense. Sheffield's another guy you could kind of throw in with that Walker Martinez group where, like, I think he should be in, all things considered, but given the context of this, it's if he gets squeezed off, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's how I feel with Sosa. It's it's exact. Like, yep, you should be in, but it's I kinda get why you're not.
Yeah. For sure. If he'd come up on 90, everything for him, like if he were on the ballot in like 1995, he would just be rubber stamped in. Nobody would like think twice about it. Talking about Sosa, Manny Ramirez is definitely.
I don't
like,
be talking about either of them. It'd be the same. Like if this was like a mid 90s vote, you'd just be like, oh yeah, in you go.
Well, like Walker and Martinez, I don't think so because they're like
Sheffield and Sosa, they've got the nice numbers.
Yeah, 500 plus.
They
600.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Manny Ramirez, I think, is actually better than this group of dudes, but he, unlike the Jeff Bagwell Piazza shadow steroids, like non-evidence stuff,
because he got caught.
Yeah, he got tested positive like a lot.
Yeah, I forgot that was why he just disappeared until today. Where it was like, I remembered like, yeah, and he went after the Sox, he went to Tampa because I think it's kind of cool that his last career home run came in a White Sox uniform.
Yeah, and he had a 420 on base.
Yeah, yeah, he just drew walks like crazy when he was with us, but that was essentially all he did.
Yep.
And, but then, yeah, I was like, I remember, yeah, he went to Tampa, and he had like a really good spring training, and then just disappeared. And I guess I had just completely forgotten. I was like, oh, yeah, because he was going to get suspended for 100 games. And I was like, nah, I'll just retire.
Didn't he play in like Korea or something?
I think he tried to. I don't know if he actually did.
But I think they have stricter testing over there, so I don't know.
Because I think the whole thing was like, his gambit was, well, if I retire and then come out of retirement, then, hey, I don't have to worry about, you know, getting suspended when I make it back up.
And they were like,
and
yeah,
it's
like,
no,
you do.
That's not really how it works. Yeah, he apparently played for the Kochi Fighting Dogs of the Japanese Shikoku Island League Plus Independent League.
Ah, that was it.
This year.
Whoa!
Yeah, they signed him in January, and it's like, oh, okay.
Career OPS of 996.
Yeah, and much like Thomas, he's got the right-hander who 300, 400, 500 split.
Yeah.
Which is just silly to look at.
Walker had that, of course. yeah, for sure. And
Walker wasn't a righty, was he?
Was he a lefty? It's been so long.
He's a lefty.
Yeah, what do I know? I'm standing for a guy and I don't know anything about him. for sure. I'm just trying to make sure before we move on to like the newer dudes. I mean, like, I think if Hoffman goes
There's not really much to discuss with like Jeff Kent and Billy Wagner. Like, yep, you guys were good.
Well, the argument for Wagner is if Hoffman's like a no-doubter, Wagner was like better on a per inning basis.
Yeah. And I mean it's like one of those dumb things where it comes down to stupidly saves. But when if that's going to be your decider, 601 is kind of a lot more impressive than 422.
Yeah, it's just the half a run of ERA.
Yeah, like, it really, they basically had the same career, but one got a lot more of the stat that is going to get him in.
And yeah, I mean, and he has another, Hoffman has like 10% more innings, which is not nothing. No. But yeah, like. And maybe the difference between 1,000 innings and 900 innings is like what these Hall of Fame voters are going on, and not the saves, I'm sure. but yeah, not much to discuss. Kent, not like a joke of a candidacy, but he's not there. And, McGriff had a cool career. He's not there either. And that brings us to the new guys. Chipper Jones, another 300, 400, 500 guy, pretty uncomplicated. He's in. Tommy's in. Okay, so that brings us to
Scott Rowland.
Yeah, are you on the BR list?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Same as you. Yeah.
Okay. So Scott Rowland
deserves it.
Yeah.
Deserves the hell out of it. Is gonna sit there until probably his eighth or ninth year.
It was a short career. He had a lot of injuries.
It was a fantastic career.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of stuff working against him. Like, he didn't have, like, the beloved franchise sort of...
Well, he was with St. Louis. He's with St. Louis. He's got at least, like, a storied enough franchise.
But the problem with everybody who came to St. Louis in that time period is that they were behind Pujols and Carpenter in everyone's hearts, for one thing. And, like, he was second fiddle to Pujols. And he came from Philly, where they hated him in Philly because Philly and... he also has
third. He kind of was an asshole in Philly from everything I ever read.
Sure. I don't know.
He was a big old prima donna there, which, I mean, I get it. If I was that good at something, I'd probably be insufferable. I'm borderline insufferable as is, and I'm not that great at anything.
You're the Scott Rowland of vets, I think. How's your back?
better than his.
Yeah. But like...
My right arm that's trash.
The things that are working against him, other than short career counting stats aren't there, is that, and he's just shy on like a lot. He didn't hit 300. He hit 280. He didn't slug 500. He slugged 490. Also, he's a third baseman, and for whatever reason, Hall of Fame voters hate third baseman,
which is super weird.
It's really weird, and he gets a lot of his value from defense, which is still and from a non. It's from third base, not from short or center, where, like, a defensive player, we'll talk about this later, can, like, really make a career with that. So he's kind of in between on a lot of these things, and I think the sum of it is he should be in.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he was a fantastic defensive third baseman. He wasn't on the level of, like, Brooks Robinson, but it's unfair to compare everyone to, like, what you think of as the paragon of that position defensively. It's like comparing a shortstop to Ozzie Smith. Like, okay. That's ridiculous. But it's like, yeah, he wasn't anywhere close to the defensive third baseman as Brooks Robinson. But holy cow, was he a better hitter.
Yeah.
Like, Brooks Robinson was an average hitter. Scott Rowland was considerably above average. Like, there were years where it's like you could make a legitimate MVP case for him. Like, in 2004, 314, 409, 598 with 34 home runs and phenomenal defense. Like, that's someone who should be thought of more highly than he seems to be.
Well, and the problem, again, is like for that year for the MVP is the guys ahead of him were Barry Bonds and Albert Pujols. And then that was the year Adrian Beltre hit 48 home runs. It was like a random, like almost any other year that year gets you an MVP award, which would have gone a long way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think he's in.
I think he deserves it. I don't know if he's actually going to get it.
Right. I think he should be in.
Yeah. Yeah, he's very deserving. I don't know that he'll make it.
Andrew Jones is kind of...
That's the exact same thing to me. It's someone who, yep, but for whatever reason. I wrote about it today, and I feel like the main knock on Andrew Jones isn't, like, obviously you can be like, well, he doesn't have, like, any of the big traditional numbers because he only has 434 home runs. Never mind that that's from a center fielder. Like, that puts him behind probably just Mantle and Mays.
Dawson might have had more.
I don't think so. And Dawson shifted to right field primarily by the end of his career. Because of his terrible knees.
Ah, Dawson had four more.
Ah, four more. But yeah, nailed Dawson it. Also wasn't a center fielder by the time he hit, like, age 29.
Did Edmonds have more? No, he did not. All right, sorry. I won't just start guessing random center fielders.
Yeah, but what I wrote about was, like, once he turned 30, he kind of turned into a pumpkin. Like, because it's ridiculous. He was in the majors as a 19-year-old. He was a regular in the majors by 20. And so then it's just like, yeah, the last 6 years of his career, he was only worth, I think it was like six. He's worth 4.9 wins above replacement over the last 6 years of his career. Total wins above replacement, 62.8.
Yeah, that's a crazy stat.
Like, what?
Especially because he had a couple, like you pointed out in your article, he had a couple nice little, I mean, I guess he was like a DH corner outfielder at that point where, you know, he had a couple of years with the Yankees and White Sox where he was like an above average hitter, like a solid DH,
He fell nicely into that role where it was like, yeah, he's not the star anymore. He's not really anyone you think about, but it was like, he's still hitting. And yeah, by then he had shifted off to the corners and DH, but he was still above average in right field as a 33-year-old when his weight was under control. But yeah, he burned really bright and then just kind of nothinged for the last years of his career. Where it's like if he had Kirby Puckett, where like, yep, and then the career just ends, came to an abrupt end early, then I think he gets looked at way more favorably and you're just like, wow, yeah, look at these numbers.
Oh, totally. I mean, because you have the first 10 years of his career. He had 267, 345, 505 with 342 home runs. That takes him up to through his age 29 season while playing like some of the best center field maybe ever. And like you said, if he had just, I don't know, had a foot amputated or something at that point, like he's probably just in as one of these elite, you know, extreme peak players with really short careers. And instead, 2 years later, in one of the, you know, most prominent seasons of his career, like one of the things people remember most, and rightfully so because it was so freaking weird, he put up a 505 OPS for the Dodgers at age 31, 2 years later. Just like forgot how to play baseball. And then he gradually, like, he, you know, bounced back a little bit to end on a higher note than that. But like, I think that really sticks in people's memories and makes it really hard to, you know, do a defense and, you know, a defense-based candidacy because that was so glaring and because he kind of dragged it out by being randomly terrible for those like 5 years before he quit.
You just compare his career to Kirby Puckett and it's like, why is Puckett in the Hall of Fame?
Well, why is Puckett in the Hall of Fame?
It's a great question. Because you look and it was like, I don't understand why Kirby Puckett's in the Hall of Fame. I really don't understand it at all.
It turns out off the field he was super gross too. So
yeah,
nice work, guys. we got some cool players here who obviously don't. Johnny Damon was a fun player because he was obviously like an all-star level player for a long time, and I can throw a baseball better than he ever could.
Damon is one of those perfect, like, Hall of Very Good guys.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, yep, you were awesome. You had a great career. You're not a Hall of Famer.
Agreed.
It's like Mark Burley, where it's like, yeah, you get to look back and you're like, that was a lot of fun. You were, like, upper 25%, but you're not in that upper 10%.
Yeah. Well said. I think it's fun that Kerry Wood and Carl Zambrano come on the ballot at the same time.
That does make me smile a lot. There's something for next year's ballot, which we'll get to at the end, that really, really makes me smile.
Oh, cool. Okay, I'll look forward to that. Chris Carpenter had, like, some individual seasons, which are, you know, absolutely brilliant, champion, all that stuff, but he can comfort himself with his World Series titles. He didn't have pitch enough innings, and he was too bad for too long. Like he didn't.
Yeah, too much of his career was just horrible. The first, he wasn't good until he was 29.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're behind the barrel.
Yeah, and then he missed two full seasons after that, too. So, he can't get in. Levon, another world champion, he can't get in. You brought up Orlando Hudson, who was, you know, an above-average infielder for a little while, but that's
not. Yeah, Hudson's one of those guys where, like, if you cheered for the Blue Jays or the Diamondbacks, you have very fond memories of him. It was like, yeah, he was good. He was a fun all-star. He's like, I mean, Robin Ventura was better, but it's kind of like the same of looking back where it was like, yep, this is this infielder who played for us and was great, not a Hall of Famer.
But yeah, I mean, like, if Lou Whitaker and Ray Durham, like, fell off the ballot, like, in one go, then, like, get out of here, O-Dog.
I think Ray Durham is a very good comparison where, yeah, it's just like, yep, this is this guy who was great for a while, who was phenomenal, like, amazing for, like, 2 or 3 years, and then just otherwise was like, yeah, you were good.
Yep.
But not, yeah, you're not anything, like, you're not Hall of Fame worthy. You're not even really Hall of Very Good worthy.
Now, you mentioned Preston Wilson, who recently dragged Aubrey Huff very nicely.
Oh, that was beautiful. Huff is, man, I remember back in, like, high school when you would read those nice, like, hey, here's these puff pieces about players that no one really cares about, like Aubrey Huff. And you'd read, like, that super sad stuff about, like, how his mom worked 2 jobs, and one of them was that she could get him a batting cage for his backyard. So that, like, he could, because I want to say it was just his mom. His dad wasn't in the picture.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, it's like a great, great story where you're like, yeah, this guy came from circumstances and worked really hard. And look, he made it. Like, yeah, he's not anything great, but he's useful. He's good enough to hang around for a 10-plus year career.
He had some real nice seasons. He had some really good seasons with those really bad Tampa teams when he first came out.
Yeah.
Won my dad some fantasy leagues, I think.
Huff was one of those guys who, yeah, it was exactly. He was just like, no one cared about him. No one knew he existed because it was the mid-2000s and it was Tampa.
Yeah.
Like, you could just grab, like, him or Julio Lugo or Jorge Cantu and just be like, yeah, I'm going to get some low-key stats because no one knows this guy exists.
Yeah, Rocco Baldelli. Although I think he had a little more fanfare. Yeah, and...
But then, yes. Science is apparently a popularity contest in his mind, and that is fascinating.
I guess he's one of the... It's fun to laugh at, I mean, because the opinions are bad, but he's not bad in the way that some of these other dudes are bad, so maybe it's more, like, amusing than anything else. Although,
yeah, but
that learning,
like,
what you said about his mom, like, how hardworking she was, the fact that he said that he made her do all his homework in college also, like, really bums me out. It's like, dude, really? She didn't do that for you?
Well, then, I have to argue that, like, his kind of bad is more insidious and dangerous, though, where it's like, yeah, it's obviously not on the same, like, paragon level of bad as being like, hey, Muslims are gross, like Kurt Schilling says, or Kirby Puckett, who was hitting women, but there's
I don't like this
undercurrent of anti-intellectualism that is, like, growing and growing by the day, and when you have pro athletes just straight up saying, like, no, that's, science isn't, no, science is opinions, and, like, the strongest opinion wins, and it's like, no, that's literally not what science is.
Yeah.
Like, I had to read stuff yesterday about people misunderstanding what pasteurization of milk is, and saying, like, no, it's, they can sell lesser quality milk, or it makes it break down so that we can digest it. And it's like, no, that's literally not what it is. It kills bacteria. It makes it safe to drink.
Yep.
And people were arguing with me this, being like, well, what's your qualification? I was like, I'm a veterinarian. Like, I've been on dairy farms. I've run these tests. I have pasteurized milk.
Like, yeah, but that's your opinion, though.
I hear you.
I hear you. It's dangerous. But, like, it's the same thing as when – not the same thing, but it's part of why I'm willing to hand wave it away for a guy like Aubrey Huff is when Michael Phelps got busted for pot, people kept saying that he was a role model, and that's why it was such a disaster. And my roommate at the time, Glenn, just said, role model? He stares at the bottom of a pool all day. Like, I don't know what... Yeah. But, yeah, point taken. Quickly touching us on these guys, just to remember them fondly. Carlos Lee was, I think, like, your prototype. I think he's just, like, a great example of... like, a solid corner outfielder who had a solid career.
He's what... If your prospect that you're dreaming on to be like, oh, this prospect is going to be the one that takes us to that next level, and they wind up just becoming Carlos Lee, you'd be like, yeah, that's not so bad.
Yeah, it's a great outcome. Like,
if he's the best player on your team, that sucks.
I think Carlos...
That sucks really bad.
I think
if you can... You need guys like him, because you're not going to have an entire team of all-stars. Carlos Lee being like that guy who quietly is usually around like 2.5 to 3.5 wins above replacement, and then like you have the occasional season at his peak where it's like, yeah, 5 or 6, like that's pretty great. Like, not everybody gets to be a Hall of Famer, but there's something to be said about being able to produce and plug guys like Carlos Lee in, and that was the strength of the White Sox when we were growing up. It was just like, oh yeah, we've got another hitter that we can just like throw out there and don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You have like
a... he's not going to blow you away, but like, all right, if you have to bat, if you have to pitch to Frank Thomas, Magaly Ordóñez, Ray Durham, and Paul Konerko, and it's like, well, Jesus, when do I get an easy at bat here? And it's like, nope, you don't. You get Carlos Lee.
Yeah.
Batting 67 for whatever reason. And it's like, okay, this sucks.
Yeah, and Jose Valentin will hit 25 homers out of shortstop or whatever. But yeah, for sure. And, you know, point taken, I mean, Carlos Lee may be. Even, I don't know, that could be an outcome in Eloy Jimenez's future, and that wouldn't
be it would be kind of disappointing if, like, that's what he turns into, but also you're looking at, like, no, that really wouldn't be that bad.
Yeah, four-time like, All-Star, you know. Okay, there's some relievers here. Brad Lidge will always be remembered for the Pujols home run. Okay.
And then the Pacific one.
Oh, also, while we were talking about off-the-field stuff, Andrew Jones also has a DV thing in his past, which is, you know, enough that I won't cry for him. Johan Santana.
I thought you were going to go back to Matsui's porn addiction.
Matsui's hilarious, and I'm tempted to. I think Japanese players occupy really interesting because he, you know, I'd have to let's see if I could pull up his MPB stats, but like he was, you know, a perennial MVP type player over there for like a decade before he came over here. People wanted to give him. If he got in based on that combined with his very nice American career, I wouldn't get upset.
You look and the four seasons before he comes over and he's playing for Yamiura, bats 304, 316, 333, 334. Mm-hmm. On base percentages, lowest in that stretch is 416.
Yep.
He slugs at lowest 617. Hits 42 home runs, 42 home runs, 36 home runs, 50 home runs. It was like, yeah, he was just like the premier slugger. And not just a slugger, like an all-around good hitter. And then comes over here and really doesn't miss a beat. Like his batting average took a hit, but his first 3 years with the Yankees, you're looking at a really, really nice career. He doesn't miss a game. Actually plays 163 in 2003.
Right, right.
Yeah, bats 297, 370, 484 with 70 home runs. And it's like, yeah, that's pretty great.
Ton of doubles. He became more of a doubles hitter than a home run hitter in America. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. And it's like it's an interesting candidacy. I can see how that might be hard to grapple with as a voter. Moyer was obviously a super fun novelty. But that gets us to, just because I'm running out of time here.
Yeah, no worries.
I don't think Santana had enough innings, unfortunately, obviously.
No,
like,
no. He burned really bright, but yeah, if he had gotten in another, like, 3 good years, then he would have a very good argument, but he just didn't.
Yeah, I just don't see it. Wouldn't be upset, like I said, because he was really great, but, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then Omar Vizquel.
Omar Vizquel. The Diet Kroger Ozzie Smith.
Yeah. Vizquel, is infuriating as a candidate because I know he's going to get a lot of traction.
Oh, yeah. He's gonna be on all 10 years.
There's no doubt he might even get in. And, like, the problem
he'll
is...
get in, I think he'll get in with the Veterans Committee. I don't think he'll get in voters-wise, but down the road he will be in.
Based on Jaws, he's the 42nd shortstop of all time, like 20 places behind Rabbit Marinville, is considered one of the worst Hall of Fame induction choices ever. And the Ozzie Smith thing, it's like you alluded to this earlier, comparing him to Ozzie Smith is ridiculous. I think I said earlier that's like comparing, what is it, like saying Vizquel is similar to Ozzie Smith is like saying Gil Hodges is similar to Babe Ruth. It's like, yeah, they did the same thing, but like,
so I think my Roland to Robinson comparison works really well, where it was like, yeah, Vizquel was a good defensive shortstop, but Ozzie Smith is the greatest defensive shortstop ever. And it's the same where, like, Roland was a very good defensive third baseman, Robinson was the best ever.
Yeah, and
but then Smith was even a better hitter than Vizquel.
But I think Vizquel was also like gets a lot more credit for his defense than he deserved. Like he was very flashy and very shorthanded. I don't think his range was like crazy, and he got a lot more attention because he was on all those like insane Indians teams. So yeah. Like, you know, I don't, you know, if he were toiling away in anonymity in like San Diego, I think all of a sudden his defensive reputation isn't as good. I think that people simultaneously want to give him credit for playing as long as he did, but also want to, you know, avail themselves of his peak when he was a solid hitter, especially for, you know, he was a very good defensive shortstop, but I don't think he's like an all-time great style defensive shortstop. I don't even mean compared to Ozzie Smith. I mean, like, at no point was he like clearly the best defensive shortstop in the league, in my opinion. I mean, there are dudes who are that good, like all the time, like Brandon Ryan and John McDonald, nobody freaks out about, like,
yeah.
Even though they were like superlatively good defensive shortstops. I don't know that Vizquel was ever on their level defensively. I was young for watching a lot of it, and that's what we're basing this on. But like,
when he debuted, I was a year old.
Yeah. He played forever, but like, he was miserable for the last like 5 years of his career. So I don't think you get credit for like sticking around, it's more than five.
Like the last like 8 years of his career, there's just nothing there.
He was actively hurting the teams he was playing on. So I don't see why you get bonus points for that, especially for teams that basically kept him around as like a coach.
Yeah, from 2007 through 2012, he was worth half a win above replacement.
Yeah. So, you know, career 688 OPS for that era. That's really bad. That's really bad.
And if you want to just even be like, oh, well, look at peak seasons. Base BWAR, 1999, 6. Pretty good. His next best is a 4. And then he never cracks 4 again.
Yeah. And, like, the idea that... I know two wrongs don't make a right, or whatever, so if you think Vizquel should be in, this doesn't necessarily cut against it, but, like, if Alan Trammell's not in, like, what are we... And Vizquel is, like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And, like, I want... Maybe some other names that, like... Jaws, I understand that, like... Wins above replacement and Jaws aren't perfect or whatever, but it still captures, like, let's see, I have to go all the way down to Vizquel, who's in between Rico Petrocelli and Dick Bartel, below Hanley Ramirez. Mark Bellinger didn't get in. It was kind of a similar case. Like, behind someone named Roger, behind Roger Peckinpah, Tony Fernandez. I don't think Jimmy Rollins is going to get a strong Hall of Fame case, and Jimmy Rollins is definitely better than Omar Vizquel. So
agreed.
Nomar fell off, like you said, in one ballot. Nomar was way better than Omar Vizquel. Unless you want to really give credit for a guy for hanging around for being like a glove only shortstop for forever.
I mean, I think deserves like a little bit of credit, but not anything on the level of like deciding amounts of credit.
Staying
healthy and being able to play that much is a skill and a talent, but yeah, it doesn't make up for the fact that those last 7 years of your career, you were worthless at the plate, like absolutely worthless.
I mean, yeah, it's a different candidacy. I mean, like I said, wins above replacements and everything. Vizquel's in the 40s. Like, I don't know, if Harold Baines didn't get in, why are we talking about Vizquel?
Yeah.
But unfortunately you get like whenever there's a bad candidacy, you get this squishy arguments where it's like,
well, if they made it, why can't they? Yeah.
Well, not just
like,
that.
Chip Weiss is in, so other people that are also not deserving should get in. It's like, no, like they shouldn't.
Well, there's
Catfish shouldn't be in there.
There's that. And then there's also like, it turns into a moving target where, like I said, you have people arguing for his accumulation, but also his peak, even though they don't want to ding him for him. You should have quit like 5 years before he did. Or the fact that they'll say like, oh, well, I had a conversation with a beat writer today who was like, well, you know, I don't go by the numbers, but he had the most double plate. You know, I don't believe in numbers. I believe in what I saw. And like, he was very selfless and he like bunted a lot. I'm like, really? Did he bunt a ton on those freaking Indians teams? And you bunt with Vizquel because he can't hit. I don't see why he gets a bonus for his managers realizing he hits like a pitcher. And it's like, you say you don't go by the numbers where, you know, something like he was a career 688 OPS hitter, very easy to measure versus like, you know, volume of double plays is just, yeah, he stuck around forever. That's not, so you believe in some numbers, you'll grab the random numbers that don't really mean much that support your point, but like you're going to hand wave away like an enormous percentage of his game, which was bad. So I don't know. I hate doing this because he was a nice player and he had a cool career, but like, he's not even close on this list. Like, if you could vote for as many people as you could, like, where would you, how many guys do you vote for before you get to Visco?
Oh, on this year's ballot, let's see. Bonds, Clemens, Jones, Messina, Tomey, Walker, Roland, Ramirez, Edgar, Andrew, Sheffield, Vlad. Probably Sosa and Schilling over him as well.
I think I'd go Kent over him too.
I would put Kent. I would maybe even put Crime Dog over him.
Yeah, same.
And I would probably put Santana over him because I would argue more about brilliance at peak.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Vizquel would be in my, like, upper teens.
I think I might even go Matsui or a couple of the relievers ahead of Vizquel too. I don't know if that's getting too hot takey. But, you know, we're talking 12 to 18 players who I think have a better argument.
Yeah, you can almost fill two ballots with players before you get to him.
Yeah. Cool. I think we agree on absolutely everything, as per always.
Yeah, it just makes sense.
And we are not embracing debate. We're embracing camaraderie.
No. So it's better.
So definitely check out Mark's. There's you know, it's random. It's a lot of guys who were only on the White Sox for a minute, the way Ken Griffey kind of was, Ken Griffey Jr. was. But seven guys on the ballot this year who were former White Sox players, which is kind of fun. I think there's like a decent streak now going of, you know, with Raines and Griffey and Thomas of former White Sox getting in, you know, by the loosest definition of former White Sox. So check that out. You can find you rejiggered your Twitter handle, right? You're at is it BPSS underscore UGod?
Correct.
Mark, thanks so much for giving me the last night of your honeymoon for this.
Oh, no problem. Real quick, though, that thing I had mentioned. Next year we have six potential White Sox, former White Sox that'll be on it for the first time, which I think all of them actually will get thrown in there. But the thing when you mentioned, oh, it's kind of fun that Zambrano and Wood are seeing it at the exact same time. Next year, Freddie Garcia, John Garland, and Jose Contreras are all eligible.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah, that's a cool group. I'm trying to think of
it. Like scrolling through, it was just like, oh, that's neat. And you also get Juan Pierre, Octavio Dotel, and Kevin Youkilis.
Maglio's.
Like, it was really cool to me that like three of the four horses from the 2005 rotation are all hitting at the same time.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I mean, obviously, I don't think I'd make a case for any of them, but...
Yeah, but, yeah. They'll probably all fall off after a year. But it's still cool that they're all hitting it at the exact same time.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're getting too strict on pitchers these days, starting pitchers of late, and that's been a problem that's been going on for a while, but yeah, I don't think... The only argument you could really make, I guess, is how much you value Contreras as, like, international... ball. That's more of like an NBA Hall of Fame argument than something that happens at the MLB Hall of Fame. But that'll be fun. Awesome.
We'll talk about that in a year.
Sounds good. Mark, thanks again. And thanks for listening, everybody.